This is the Kona Edge, the home of Ironman triathletes who dream of qualifying for the World Championships on the Big Island.
Welcome on to this edition of the Kona Edge. My name is Brad Brown. It's good to have you with us. Thank you so much for joining me today. And I get to share another fantastic story of an Ironman qualifier and someone who's raced on the Big Island today, talking about Brian Melinatz. His story coming up on today's podcast. Before we get into that, though, a big thank you to the sponsor of this edition of the Kona Edge. It is brought to you by Wheel Science. If you're looking for high-performance wheels for your bike, tell you what, you will definitely not go wrong with Wheel Science. Go check them out, because the wheels that they've got are phenomenal. All the performance you need at half the price. They've done some independent testing, and you look at the likes of Zip and the price that those cost compared to the performance, and Wheel Science is right up there and literally at a fraction of the price. So if you'd like to find out more about Wheel Science, all you need to do is head over to this URL, okay? It is thekonaedge.com/wheels. That's thekonaedge.com/wheels. Once you've checked them out as well, the folks over at Wheel Science, Peter and Joe Coombe, have been kind enough to give me a coupon code that I can give to you to get 10% off. So not only are their prices super low normally, but because you're a loyal listener of the Kona Edge, we'll give you a 10% discount. The coupon code to use is Kona Edge, all one word. That's Kona Edge, and get 10% discount. Go check them out. So thekonaedge.com/wheels is the URL to get to. And I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, over the last week and a bit actually, I've been putting some work together behind the scenes here at the Kona Edge. If you are a coach, you definitely want to check this out. I'm giving you the opportunity to check out my Facebook Ads for Coaches Masterclass. I did it this last Friday, and the response has been pretty cool. It's 40-odd, 50 minutes, and it is packed with some incredible information. I think it is, and by everybody who's attended it have pretty much told me the same thing. So if you're looking to grow your coaching business and you want to figure out how to use Facebook Ads to do it, I can tell you what, it is one of the most incredible platforms to use, and you can get some amazing results. So go check it out. That if you head over there now to thekonaedge.com/masterclass, you can check it out and get all the details there. If you've got any questions, please pop me a mail, brad@thekonaedge.com. enough of me yakking, let's get straight into our chat with Brian Melinatz. Welcome on to this edition of the Kona Edge. My name is Brad Brown, and we head to what is arguably the mecca of triathlon in the US, to Boulder, Colorado. We're joined now by Brian Melinatz. Brian, welcome onto the podcast. Thanks for joining me.
Hey, Brad. Yeah, happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Boulder's a tough place to live if you're a triathlete, Brian.
Oh, man, it's awesome. This is my second stint here. I was here for undergrad and then down in Austin, Texas for about 10 years, and now I'm back for three. And amazing place to train, amazing people to train with. Definitely pushes me and keeps things fun and exciting for sure.
I normally ask people what the scene is like where they live as far as triathlon goes, but I think Boulder's world famous for sporting, not just triathlon. I mean, I know cyclists, I know runners, I know trail runners. It's just such an amazing place. It's beautiful. Let's not deny that, but it must be amazing training with the caliber and the quality of athletes you've got access to in Boulder.
Oh, yeah. It's super humbling. I remember when I moved back here, there was a guy that I was chatting with, and he was a rock climber, but he made the comment he had moved here from somewhere on the East Coast. And he's like, well, Boulder's awesome, but you can forget about being top 10 in anything, because the top 10 in the world are all here for those extreme sports.
I love that.
So, yeah, it's definitely a good, humbling place to be, but fun for sure.
What took you back to Boulder, Brian?
Well, I mean, the mountains and the environment drew me here the first time and drew me back. There's something called the curse of Chief Niwot, that people have told me about, now that I'm back. And, so Chief Niwot was an Indian chief that used to live in this valley, and he made a proclamation that said, once you come to Boulder, you will always return. And then he was an early environmentalist, because there was part of the proclamation that follows that says, and in doing so, you will destroy it. So he saw the environmental impact of too many people coming here before that was even a thing. But yeah, the curse of Niwot says that once you bend a boulder, you will always return. So it definitely got its hooks in me.
It's kind of like Iron Man, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
once you've got it in the blood, there's definitely no going back. So many people say it's a one and done, but we all know that isn't the case. Let's talk some triathlon. How did you get into the sport?
Sure. I got into cycling initially fairly young in middle school. Just my best friend in middle school's uncle was a bike racer, not professional, but a competitive amateur. And he got into it and I followed him into it. And middle school and high school was super excited about cycling, and then got into mountain biking, did some mountain bike races when I was in college. And then triathlon, I dipped my toes in for the first time a little bit after college in 2003 with the Boulder Peak Triathlon when I was still living here. So my first triathlon was one in Boulder, Olympic distance Boulder Peak back in 2003.
So you've been around the sport for quite some time now as well. It's obviously changed a hell of a lot in the last 15 years.
It's definitely gotten, at least from my participation in it, bigger, more competitive. The events are larger productions. I think a lot of that's MDOT, no doubt. And some of the local races are still a little bit smaller, but I feel like when I first started out, like, you could be kind of active and still ended up maybe in the top 10. But you're not getting the top 10 now unless you're really focused. And that's like your number one hobby, and you're spending 5+ days a week doing things, which it's good. It pushes you. And it's fun to see the sport grow. Boulder Peak Triathlon is still going. And then it was completely between 2003 and 2013 was the first time I dipped my toe to the 70.3 distance. And that was when I was living in Texas, and I did the Austin Half Ironman in 2013. It was kind of elevating it to that next level. Longer, more rewarding, tougher races, more focused on the training to be able to do that and not completely destroy yourself. But it's been a fun journey for sure.
Brian, coming into the sport, making the transition from bike racing to triathlon, was it something you struggled with, or did picking up the two extra sports come quite easily to you?
Yeah, so it's funny, like I said, my background was cycling, and then competitively more mountain biking than anything else. And then when I finished college, I found that after work, having an hour to do something wasn't really long enough to get a good sweat on the bike. But if I ran for a half an hour or an hour, that was a pretty solid workout. So I started running more because I enjoyed endurance stuff, and it was something I could squeeze in after work. And I've come to discover I'm pretty light, pretty lean. I don't generate a lot of power on the bike. Running is my strength now. I am a relatively stronger runner than I am a cyclist. And swimming, I just get through. I did not swim in high school or anything like that. And I can hold my own, but I am a mediocre swimmer.
How frustrating is that?
I'm glad it's the shortest discipline. I slowly am getting better, but it's taking a lot of time. I think there's a lot of technique to swimming. The folks that I know that are really strong, fast swimmers, like I said, I didn't, but I feel a lot of them swam competitively in high school or possibly even college. And it's just, it humbles me how those guys with swimming backgrounds will swim laps at like my 100, like sprint splits. It's practice. I think there's a lot of technique to swimming, and it takes a long time to get efficient and quick in the water.
Brian, I mean, coming from a bike racing, and you talk about mountain biking, it's funny. I was having a chat with a friend of mine who's done a couple of Ironmans herself, but she started out as a roadie bike racing and absolutely loves mountain biking. And it's I mean, that side of the sport in cycling is really growing. Do you find you found a home in triathlon, or do you still go and ride the odd mountain bike race, and is that still part of your regime?
Yeah. No, I haven't done, I do a lot of run races. My wife's a runner, not a triathlete. She's done a half Ironman, but she's not super comfortable on the bike nor in the water. So she prefers running events. And so, we've done half marathons, a handful of marathons. So as far as other discipline specific events, it's really only running that I participate in. Having said that, I did my first Xterra this year, and that was a lot of fun. But I rarely get out on the mountain bikes these days. I enjoy it. It's one of those things that I haven't squeezed in as much, and I haven't been doing mountain bike specific or road specific racing for ages.
I was going to say, that must be sacrilege living in Boulder. There's some amazing trails around there.
Oh, I know. Yeah. The last ride, at mountain bike ride I did was 4th of July weekend down in Telluride with a buddy on some single tracks, which were unbelievable.
Brilliant. Well, Brian, tell me about sort of growing up. Were you sporty as a young kid? I mean, obviously you've got some bike riding in your background, but was there anything else?
So I don't know that I was super athletic. I definitely had an endurance twist to me. I mean, again, I'm pretty lean. I'm pretty light. Always felt too small growing up, and certainly couldn't compete in football. Or I played baseball for a while, but then that got into high school. I didn't quite have the strength or the power to compete. I felt and enjoyed cycling, and I could get my bike going and get my heart running and keep up with pretty much anyone. And so really found a niche in that endurance sport. Probably should have tried cross country in high school, but I didn't, coincidentally. I think I probably would have been good at it, but, I happened to play volleyball, in high school. I think for 2 or 3 years, and then senior year, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to ride on my own time, 'cause that's the sport I like. That's the sport that I'm good at. And had a handful of other friends, and we would mountain bike all over the place in high school, after school, and on the weekends.
As far as the competitive spirit, I'm taking it, you've had that pretty much all along.
Yeah, I like to compete with others, and I think one of the things that I really like about triathlon now is that even when I'm not competing with others, and frankly, Strava as an app, and I'm sure there's others that folks are using, help make it easy. I can compete with myself, and I get a huge sense of accomplishment when I see that I'm improving. And I'm my early 40s now, so I know at some point biology is going to turn on me and I won't be able to hit those PRs, but I still squeak them out every once in a while on certain things now, and I love it.
That's brilliant. Brian, talk to me about the sort of allure to Ironman and Kona as a one-off race. But I mean, you mentioned running a lot of races, half marathons, a few marathons. I mentioned mountain bike races. There's so many great events in the States, worldwide. What's the attraction to, and not just MDOT races, but the long, full distance Ironman races?
Again, it's something that I found that I'm good at and enjoy for that. I can put my head down and kind of internally meditate or think about things for hours on a long ride or a long run. And that works for me for my endorphin highs too. Like I read an article once that certain people, like their endorphins get unlocked by different type of activities. And some of those people that get a rush out of sprints and some of the like powerlifting stuff, like they can unlock their endorphins on short bursts of like fast twitch muscles. And other people, it takes maybe an hour to really get the endorphins flowing. And I've found that like sometimes I won't feel super motivated and I'll get out and I'll start on a ride, and about a half an hour into it, like, those endorphins get flowing, and then middle of that ride, 3 hours in, like, I feel great. And it might hurt, and there might be some times where it's tough. And then at the end of it, that's that feeling of satisfaction and accomplishment, and really something that I've found I like. And those long distance events definitely tap into that and push me. Having said that, like, I think those of us that do long distance half and full Ironman distances are a little twisted, and that's fine, and I enjoy it. Other folks that I think are more twisted, and I appreciate it, but I have no interest in doing, are like ultra marathon running. I totally understand it. I think we're cut from the same cloth, but yeah, running 50 or 100 miles has zero appeal to me.
I've got a few of those under my belt, Brian. I won't argue that we are a bit twisted.
Yep, I respect and I appreciate it. I know where you're coming from, but yeah, Ironman is where I find my willies.
I always joke, and I say endurance athletes just love hanging out on the dark side. That's you end up taking yourself to places you don't ordinarily get the opportunity to go, and I think that's where you learn the most about yourself.
Yeah, that's a great way to describe it. But I remember watching Ironman as a kid in like middle school, and that's back when Dave Scott and Mark Allen would duke it out, and that would be on Wide World of Sports every summer. And I looked forward to that and watched it, was fascinated by it. I mean, I remember back then thinking that might be something that would be interesting and fun to do. Again, it was 30 years later that I actually did my first full Ironman. But yeah, like that experience at the end of a full Ironman. I love the half, I love the full, but to your point, that pushing yourself over and through the dark side, and it can happen in shorter races, but people always ask me, what's the big difference between a half and a full Ironman? And I feel if you're training a lot and you're training hard, that you can kind of race through a half Ironman. It's certainly going to hurt because you're pushing yourself maybe a little bit harder through that end of that run. But the full Ironman, and I think some of those pros with as fast as they run, they actually can race through a full Ironman, and they're training a lot more. But the last 10 miles of a marathon in a full Ironman are survival. Like, even if you're kind of, at least for me, even if I'm kind of maintaining a decent pace, that last 10 miles is just really digging deep, keeping those legs moving, fighting past the pain, pushing out those like discouraging thoughts that, oh, maybe I should walk. This is really hard. My legs hurt. My lungs hurt. I'm dehydrated. And yeah, then pushing through that. And then when you get near and cross that finish line, like that feeling of I pushed through, I persevered, I accomplished this finish is, every time it's amazing. And that's, I mean, to your point, you keep coming back. That's what I keep coming back for.
You bring something interesting up there too, talking about the last 10 miles in an Ironman. People often think, oh, once you get off the bike, that's pretty much halfway in the race, and it's halfway to the finish. But in my mind, I don't think so. I think it's about 13 miles in the marathon. That is halfway. It's battling those demons in the final half of the marathon that, if you're competing for an age group podium or a Kona spot, that is where the race is won and lost. It's are you able to push through that to get what you've worked for?
Absolutely. Yep. No, I mean, that's when it gets hard. That's where those hours of swimming and biking and the first half of the marathon are really catching up with you, and your nutrition levels are low. Hopefully you've been hydrating and eating right. And yeah. I agree. That's where it all comes together.
And I think that's where a lot of guys and girls who get into the sport, I don't want to say they miss the point, but they only, and I only realized this probably after two or three Ironmans, is everyone has that. It doesn't matter how hard you train. It doesn't matter how fit you are. You are going to go through that in an Ironman. Whereas when I first started, I thought, oh, I just need to work harder, and that won't happen. But you learn to manage it better the more experienced you are. It's not, it's not necessarily, in my mind, and I don't know if you agree, in my mind, it's not necessarily just a fitness thing. It's a mental thing.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, you definitely need to be fit and put in the hours so that you're not collapsing, you're not cramping, you don't have to walk so that your body can maintain it. And even if you're fit, presumably you're pushing yourself to that limit, and whether that limit's a little faster, a little slower for each individual, when it comes down to that, last hour and a half or so of the marathon, like, you definitely got to dig in mentally and push through.
Brian, talk to me about Kona. And I mean, now that you've, you've experienced it, what would you tell that little kid watching Kona back in the day on Wide World of Sports, having experienced what you've experienced now?
Oh, man, it is an incredible venue. And I mean, talking about that perseverance and challenging, it definitely takes it up to another level. So yeah, I mean, the first full Ironman I did, was, 2015, 2 years after my first, half Ironman. And it was the Boulder inaugural. And when I, before doing that marathon, so my first half Ironman, I remember thinking, like, it was a decent pace, but I would have to go faster for twice as long to even get anywhere near a Kona qualifying. So I had some friends that had been to Kona. So I did not think that was at that point in time in my realm of possibility. When I finished my first Ironman, it was decent. It was just under 11 hours. It was still an hour shy of anything that would have been competitive for a Kona slot. But I started to think of it as a possibility, a lifetime goal that might sometime come to be. And then the next year I did Boulder again and got a little bit quicker. I think I shaved maybe 20 minutes off of that and got down near a little bit over a 10:30. And was still well outside of Kona contention. I think that ended up being 20 something overall in my age group. And then the next year I trained a little bit more, put a little bit more hours in, kind of mentally started to know what it took and what to expect in that full Ironman distance race and how to kind of pace yourself and, how to stay fueled throughout. And then the next year I did Whistler, and was able to get in a ninth place in my age group. So still outside of the Kona slot. I crossed my fingers, but it was a pipe dream that the roll downs would go that deep. I heard they used to maybe 10 years ago, but they do not go 10 deep anymore in the 40 to 44s. But anyway, I got just inside the top 10 at Whistler, and up till then I'd never done coaching. And I thought, well, shoot, if I can get into ninth without, I was putting in a lot of time for sure, but without really disciplined, structured training, I was like, I'll bet if I coach for a little while, I might be able to get over that hump. And then being in Boulder, they do virtual coaching. So they coach people around the world, but, I got connected with Boulder coaching, that's Simon Lessing's outfit. And so for those that don't know, Simon Lessing is still the world record holder for the Olympic distance triathlon. He's a South African British citizen who's now, he's been in the U.S. for decades. He's now a U.S. citizen, but he lives in Boulder. Like, amazing people live in Boulder. But him and then Darren Durack, who is the running coach, who is calling multiple time Olympic marathoner that he had trained, and he trains elite runners. So they kind of divide up their training into Simon does the cycling, Darren does the running, and then Simon's wife, Lisa, does the swimming, and she was a competitive collegiate swimmer. So between the three of them, they've got a lot of experience and a lot of good guidance. And I got connected with them and did their coaching, and literally was able to turn around. And Whistler was, I believe, end of July that year, and hopped on with their coaching in August and really scouted a race that would suit my strength. That I thought I could potentially get into that top three or top four in the age group. Running has been my strength. I tend to win well. So I figured, and again, I'm not a super strong, powerful cyclist. So I wanted a cycling course that was hilly, that would neutralize some of the bigger, really powerful cyclists that could put minutes on me in a fast, flat course, tens of minutes on a flat course. And then looking for a run that was relatively flat so that I could stay fast throughout. Whistler was a tough run. It was really hilly. I did okay, but those hills, maybe slowed me more down than I thought a flat course would. And then I'm not a great swimmer, so I was hoping to find one that was wetsuit legal. And I found two of the three. So I ended up finding Cabo, after I narrowed everything down, and it didn't end up being wetsuit legal. But researching it, it looked like sometimes it was, sometimes it wasn't. That particular year, it wasn't. But I had an okay swim. And then the bike is pretty hilly. I think it had about as much elevation gain in the two laps that Whistler had, and Whistler's very hilly bike. And I always told myself if I could get off the bike in the top 10 in the age group, I felt like I could run myself to that third or fourth spot. And Cabo was a small race. One other advantage that year that Cabo offered me, was it was in October, 2 weeks after Kona. So none of the regular Kona qualifiers were there. So that helped a little bit. And they stopped doing the full there, I think, because they didn't get a ton of participation. The whole race had less than 300 participants, where in Boulder, I think I had 300 in my age group. So there was a lot of things that lined up well for that race. And my wife gave me the split off the bike, and I think that helped me run faster. But I came off the bike and she said, "You're second in your age group," which was a huge surprise and rush. I was hoping I might be in the top 10, but second in my age group, in my mind, already had a Kona slot as long as I didn't screw up the run, was awesome to hear. I hit that run at Cabo, and it was a hot and humid environment, which hurts. But another thing I've discovered, I can do well okay in the heat. And it's another thing that putting myself up against the really big, strong, powerful cyclist, when they have that much muscle mass, those hot days on those hot runs slow them down that much more. So, the water, or aid stations were plentiful on that course. And so I was able to hydrate regularly. I was able to throw ice down my back regularly and keep my body temperature in control. And was able to run, through and maintain. I never caught the guy that was in front of me. I think he was a fast German. I talked to him a little bit afterwards. He'd been to Kona 8 times. And he started he was a big, powerful cyclist. He was probably 6'4". I'm like 5'9". He started the run, I think, nearly a half an hour ahead of me, and I finished a minute behind him in the final event. But anyway, that was next to Kona, a huge rush in getting to Kona. From my first half Ironman of never thinking that was possible to my first Ironman of thinking it was possible, but it might take years to get to shave that hour off or to stay fast as I got maybe into my 50s and maybe it got a little bit easier. Although I thought it would get easier when I turned to 40. I don't think the 40 to 44s are any slower, at least in those top qualifying slots, than the 35 to 39s. It's a tough field, tough journey. And to your point of Ironman getting bigger, I think that the competition gets stronger every year. But yeah, got that spot. And then being at and going to Kona was an unbelievable experience. I mean, all the history and the heritage of that venue and that location, the city of Kona Town is transformed, and maybe in the past they might not have liked the crowds, but now that is part of their history and their culture, and Kona welcomes and loves the race weekend. Everyone is super friendly, super excited, super focused on the race and your stories and where you came from and how you got there, and sharing and learning what other people's stories are. But yeah, just that build and lead up to the race is amazing. The atmosphere, the electricity in the air, and then it's nerve wracking, but in a good, fun way, But then, yeah, you finally get to that race day, and it ended up being a great day for us that day. It was last year, 2017. The day before, there were some pretty big swells coming through in the harbor. I grew up in Southern California. Like I swim in the surf. Like I'm comfortable with that, but it'll certainly slow you down. I haven't swam for over an hour and stuff like that. I didn't know if I would get motion sick. I didn't think I would, but there were big swells rolling in when we did our practice swims the day before. But morning of, it was calm. It was flat. The winds were unusually calm for Kona. And the swim ended up being smooth. It went well. People talk about that swim being super just violent and bumpy and crowded. Now, I think if I was a top swimmer and I'd lined up in the front right, I probably would have been a little violent. But I know that I'm not a top swimmer. I was not about to line up in the front right. I lined up on the far left and kind of near the front, maybe two or three rows deep, but on the far left. And it ended up being good seating for me. Like I looked up, and every time I looked up, there were people everywhere in the water surrounding me in every direction, but we all seemed to be going the same pace. So it didn't end up being super, super violent where I was. And I'm sure like having the surrounding people kind of towed me along, and I had non-wetsuit legal, a pretty good swim for me. And then the bike again, like we lucked out that day because there was definitely winds. I mean, but they probably didn't get much over 10 miles an hour, maybe some gust at 15, which for Kona is super mild from what I've heard and what I've seen on TV on other years. So we went out on the way out. There was maybe a gentle headwind. And then the turnaround at Javi, after we came down the hill and then got back on Queen K, I think the wind shifted because I didn't have a tailwind on the way back. I felt like it was a gentle headwind going back too, but it was a gentle wind. The day after, my family and I took a tour out to see the volcano, which, side note, unbelievable that it's erupting now a year later. But we took a tour out to the volcano, and the winds were gusting like 50 miles an hour that day coming across Queen K. If it had been like that the day before, good Lord, like that would have been a whole different experience. But the winds that they cooperated, the spirits of the island were on our side that day for the race. And then it was hot and humid like it always is. The run, I think I got a little bit too excited about, having had a great run at Cabo a year before. And knowing that the run's my strength, I started out the run, felt good, felt like I was keeping things under control and holding back a little bit. But those first 10 miles, I went quick, and I've been warned not to go too quick on the first 10, which, are pretty flat out and back on Ali'i. I went at a pace that I was hoping and thought I might maintain. That was not the case. So the first 10 miles went well. I was told, but I'll reiterate it. And folks that haven't done it before, well, maybe they'll have to experience it. Maybe they'll learn from what I'm saying. But then the run gets hard, and not just the distance, but the topography of the run after the first 10. Once you get out on Queen K, then you're climbing from mile 10 to about mile 15 before you drop into the energy lab. And, it's a little up and down, but it's mostly up, and it is much, much harder. You're exposed. There's no shade anymore at all. It's lonely. There's a few people, but not as many spectators as there are in Ali'i. And mile 10 to 15, that soul searching and deep digging happened sooner than I expected to, and sooner than it did on other long course events. And then I knew the energy lab was going to be tough. But it lived up, and it was tougher than I expected. Dropping down into the energy lab, like it's a steep drop for maybe a half mile down into the energy lab. And I thought I would be able to speed up, after I made that turn and drop down just with the downhill. But I was suffering, and I went in down the energy lab at about the same pace that I was then struggling to maintain up through mile 15. And I was like, oh boy, if I can't pick up my speed on the steep downhill, coming home is gonna be humbling. And I was also, I was ready for my transition bag. I needed and wanted the stuff that was in that transition bag as far as like my hydration mix and a banana baby food puree that I like to eat. And I thought I was going to be able to grab my transition bag at the hill on the energy. I didn't realize that after you've been bought at the hill on the energy lab, you still have a mile out and back flat down there before you come back to the neutral support. I said transition bag, but the neutral support bag, before you climb up out of the energy lab. So I saw the neutral support bag and then saw this out and back ahead of me where I didn't quite see the turnaround because it's about a half mile away. And I was just like, oh man, so I don't get my food yet. That was a low point. That was the low point of the race right there at the bottom of the energy lab. Was ready for food. Maybe I could have crossed the road and taken it there, but I was going to like run till I was supposed to take it. And so went down to that turnaround. Got to the food and had to walk. And other than maybe my first, and well, even my first Ironman, like I've come to a slow trot, but I've prided myself on not walking on the run. Maybe it's not the best strategy. I mean, maybe walking through the aid stations would have prevented that low point at Kona if I started walking just through the aid stations earlier. But I was like, okay, I'm hurting. I need to collect myself. I am going to walk and eat this food and drink some scratch. And hopefully I will find a second wind. And I kind of trotted and walked and trotted and walked my way up out of the energy lab. And one thing I hadn't been told before, but it was great. One thing they've got now coming down the energy lab is Red Bull has their big red sponge. And so, it's hot and humid out there, and they're handing out sponges and ice and water throughout the course. But the Red Bull station now at the energy lab has got a sponge that's 10 times the size of a normal sponge. It is like a foot long and half a foot wide. And I don't know what they're soaking it in, but it is just a few degrees above freezing when they hand it to you out of that bucket, and dumping that over your head is a wake up, a good wake up call, because that water is so cold and there's so much of it in that sponge that helped me kind of get out of my funk and trotted and walked my way out of the energy lab with the help of that big red sponge, and then got to the top. And I want to say you're at that point that I can't remember exactly. I think you're about mile 18-ish at the top of the energy lab. And then there's some ups for sure, but it's kind of rolling down that mile 18 now through 21, 22, back along Queen K. And like at that point, I was doing better, but I was definitely hurting. It was hot. I pushed hard. It was a long day. The environment at Kona is unlike anything else. And so I was walking every aid station at that point, but was still able to muster up and keep moving in between the aid stations. And at that point, like to talk about the differential, I started out too fast on Ali'i running around 7 mile split. And I definitely couldn't maintain that, but was hoping and thought that I might maintain a 7:15 average after that overall. I ended up having a decent run, but I was struggling between those aid stations on that way back to maintain 8 minute splits with walking every aid station in between. So it was a pretty big difference for how I felt at the beginning to how I felt at that three quarter mark of the run. But then when I turned off of Queen K, and then you drop back down pretty good steep hill at that point back to Ali'i, running down that descent was fast. The endorphins were starting to max out. The adrenaline was kicking in, knowing I was less than 2 miles to go and that I was going to make it. And then I was not going to like collapse and fall apart. And then I was going to get a finish on Ali'i and that location. That's incredible. And then you get into Ali'i and you've got a little over a mile to go. And yeah, I think I ran my fastest split on that last mile because I couldn't even feel it as I was floating down that drive to the finish. So unbelievable location, incredible race, and everything cooperated that day. It was hard. I wouldn't have appreciated it as much if it wasn't as hard as it was to get over that low point in the energy lab.
Well, Brian Boulder got its hooks into you. Has Kona got its hooks into you? Was that a one and done, or are you definitely going back?
Oh, man, I hope to go back. I will say that to get there and to be able to do it, well, I mean, to qualify is super hard now. So you had to train a lot to be fast enough to qualify. And it's a lot of training. I'm married. I try to balance. I don't have kids yet. So the people that have kids and can train that much and balance all of that, unbelievable. But yeah, it's trying to balance family life. I kind of promised my wife I would not do a full this year. And so I'm training a little bit less, although I did just qualify for Nice 70.3 last weekend at Boulder. So super psyched about that. Still doing the halves. I'm going to do that world championship at Nice next year. So I won't do a full next year either, but someday, yeah, I would love to do another Kona qualifying effort and see if I can't get back there.
Let me guess, it's going to be synced when you age group up.
I don't know. I mean, I think everyone else that's fast in my age group just keeps getting older and not slower. So yeah, it's a humbling. Well, and again, like, I mean, being in Boulder and then the people out here to train with, like, I mean, winning my age group is not even like possible. I mean, when you got folks like Steve Johnson and Tim Holla, who are two of the top 40 to 4-year-olds in the country, and those are the guys showing up with the local Boulder races that you're going up against, like, my goal is to get near the podium, and I'm super psyched if I can do that, because the folks out here are the best folks in the age group in the whole country. And now I've got, and he's a great guy, and I went to Coeur d'Alene and shared a house with him, and he shows up on some of my training room runs. But Rob Gray, the reigning Ultraman world champion, is in my age group, and I found out a year younger than me. So until I turn 45, I got to deal with him, and he's local. So yeah, it is humbling and pushes me, and is great to be great and challenging to be in this location for Ironman.
Well, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Brian, thank you so much for your time today on the Kona Edge. I look forward to talking about your individual disciplines, but we'll save that for next time. Thanks for your time.
Sounds good, Brad. Thank you.
Thank you very much to Brian, and thank you very much to you for listening to this edition of The Kona Edge. It is hugely, hugely appreciated to have you on board. I've also been asking for some iTunes reviews, and I said if you leave me an iTunes review, I will give you a shout out on the podcast, and that's exactly what I'm doing. We got one in just a couple of days ago from Clant Reviews, I think I've pronounced that correctly, saying, love The Kona Edge. During my daily commute, I listen to The Kona Edge. It's short, good, inspiring, and I learn a lot. So keep up the great work. Second 70.3 in 2 weeks. Wish me luck. Well, good luck. Let us know how it goes. Pop me an email, brad@thekonaedge.com. I'd love to hear how the race goes. Which one are you doing? Be in touch. As I said, that email address is brad@thekonaedge.com. Don't forget, if you wouldn't mind leaving us a review on iTunes, I'll give you a shout out on the podcast. It's as simple as that. It helps us grow, and it's a way for you to help us get the podcast in front of more triathletes just like you. Before we go, though, a massive thank you to our sponsor for this edition of the Kona Edge. It was brought to you by Wheel Science. If you'd like to get 10% off high performance racing wheels, All you need to do is head over to this URL, okay? It is thekonaedge.com/wheels, and be sure to check out Wheel Science. They've got high-performance wheels at half the price. They've done independent testing up against some of the biggest brands in the world, and they are right up there, better than some, and like I said, at half the price. So go check them out. That's thekonaedge.com/wheels. And if you buy a set of wheels, it doesn't cost you anything, but it helps us stay in business here at the Kone Edge. So we really do appreciate your support and supporting sponsors of the podcast as well. Until tomorrow, from myself, Brad Brown, it's cheers.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kone Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Kone Edge.